Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'll be reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, October 24th and Wednesday, October 25th, 2023. We'll begin with Tuesday's edition. Front page. YMCA seeks reversal of P&Z decision by Stuart Doreen. The Midland YMCA is looking to expand into Northwest Midland. The process will take a high-profile step at Tuesday's Midland City Council meeting as developers will seek approval of a proposed preliminary plat for a YMCA addition immediately southeast of the intersection of Golden Gate Drive and Mockingbird Lane. Earlier this month, the City of Midland's Planning and Zoning Commission recommended, by a vote of 5-0, denial of the preliminary plat of the 25.195-acre tract. YMCA officials in an opinion article in the Reporter Telegram stated that the Midland YMCA North will serve the needs of Midland families seeking affordable after-school programming for children aged 5 to 12 and health and wellness programs for individuals of all ages. It will free up to 100 spots at the Midland YMCA downtown, YMCA officials stated. This means that more individuals in our community can access the YMCA services, helping them to lead healthier lives. Moreover, it creates up to 225 possible enrollments from nearby elementary schools at the North location, giving children a safe, nurturing environment in which to grow and learn. YMCA officials also stated the Midland YMCA is ready to build a comprehensive plan for the remaining acreage that will best serve the community. This includes pickleball, fitness classes, social activities, and family events, connecting people to make this an even better place to live, work, and play. There will be some in that area opposing the project because of the increased traffic and the lack of road infrastructure in the Northwest. The Midland City Council in a recent meeting talked about the need to upgrade Briarwood County Road 60 in Northwest Midland and even provide a traffic light in order to better regulate the flow of traffic. A group called Responsible Growth Midland stated in an opinion article earlier this month that Gabe McClelland, transportation manager for the City of Midland, deemed these roads as substandard. He recommended that all roads associated with the YMCA expansion be properly expanded and developed before any facility should be considered. The community group composed of concerned citizens in Northwest Midland also noted that another area of concern is the YMCA's inconsistent stance on services due to the land's AE designation. The YMCA has refrained from seeking a rezone because of concerns that the local community may vote against it. Landgraf, Crutcher & Associates of Odessa is the representative of the YMCA on this request. Expect flat to lower heating bills this winter, by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Winter is coming. Midlanders can expect highs in the lower 50s or upper 40s by Halloween. And with winter comes heating bills. The Energy Information Administration offered good news for consumers in its recent Winter Fuels Outlook forecasting that U.S. households can expect flat to lower heating bills this season, which the agency defines as November through March. In the agency's southern region, which includes Texas, household natural gas expenditures are forecast to fall 15% and prices per MCF 22%, while consumption is expected to rise 9%. In the same region, electricity expenditures, which can be affected by natural gas prices when power generation is fueled by natural gas, are expected to rise 2%, while prices per kilowatt are forecast to fall 3% and consumption rise 5%. Approximately 46% of U.S. homes use natural gas as their main heating fuel, making it the most widely used residential heating fuel. Electricity is also widely used, especially in the southern region. The share of U.S. homes using electricity as their primary heating fuel has risen from 38% in 2013 to 42% today. The agency based its outlook on a decline in natural gas prices. Last winter, the agency noted, residential retail natural gas prices were higher than they had been in the previous 10 winters, averaging $14.85 per MCF. The Henry Hub benchmark future has been significantly lower this year, averaging below $3 per MCF each month except January. The agency forecasts a 21% or $3.16 per MCF decline in the average residential retail price this winter season. The agency is also basing its outlook on weather trends based on data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the previous 30-year trend. The EIA is assuming temperatures for the 2023-24 winter season in the eastern part of the country will be slightly cooler than last year, but warmer than the average of the 10 previous winters. In the west, this winter is assumed to be warmer than last winter, which was very cold, and warmer than the average of the previous 10 winters. In its southern region, the EIA is forecasting the winter to be cooler with an 11% rise in heating degree days, a measure of how cold temperatures are compared with the base temperature. The rise in heating degree days indicate colder temperatures. How Exxon's $60 billion Pioneer deal came together. Exxon makes up for lost time with $60 billion shale deal. By Kevin Crowley, Keel Porter, and Mitchell Furman, Bloomberg. 3 years ago, oil prices dipped below zero, and Scott Sheffield's company, like so many others, was in trouble. The longtime oil man had built Pioneer Natural Resources Company from a family-run domestic driller into one of the largest acreage holders in the Permian Basin, a massive shale oil resource that has helped the U.S. more than double its crude production over the past decade. With the stock trading near a 10-year low, oil demand collapsing due to the pandemic, and a financial community that viewed shale executives as spendthrift wildcatters, Sheffield made one of the biggest calls of his five-decade career. He waved away a takeover approach from Exxon Mobil Corporation, according to people familiar with the matter. The decision proved prescient. Sheffield's holdout resulted in a $60 billion purchase agreement from Exxon, four times more than the company's value in 2020. For Exxon, the deal represents the end of the world's largest investor-owned oil company playing defense. Chief Executive Officer Darren Woods was forced to watch as arch rivals Chevron Corporation and ConocoPhillips made big deals during the pandemic as investors soured on his $200 billion plan to invest in fossil fuels at a time when many questioned their future. But such is the strength of Exxon's stock rebound in the last 18 months, in part driven by the same spending that Woods was criticized for, that the Pioneer deal became cheaper than it would have been 3 years ago on an all-stock basis. The acquisition makes the Texas oil giant the dominant producer in the Permian, the world's most important basin outside of OPEC, and provides the ability to flex production to meet short-term demand, which will be crucial in the energy transition. The deal isn't a sure thing. Winning approval from the Biden administration may prove a challenge, and analysts have questioned whether Exxon can bring down the cost of Pioneer's drilling program as much as Woods claims. And the last time Exxon made a mega deal in shale, buying gas-focused XTO Energy for $41 billion in 2010, it haunted the company for years as gas prices tumbled. In an interview, Woods insisted that the newest Permian giant will enjoy costs below $35 a barrel that will insulate it from downturns, improve recovery rates, and lower emissions, resulting from the best of both organizations' abilities. One of the first CEOs to see the Permian's promise, the outspoken cowboy boot-wearing Sheffield, will sit alongside the more measured corporate executive Woods on the Exxon board, forming an unlikely pairing that will now lead America's biggest oil basin. The following story of how the deal came together is based on interviews with executives and people involved in the transaction. The dark. Woods inherited a company that had fallen out of favor with Wall Street. Rex Tillerson, his predecessor, had invested heavily in mega projects that ran over budget, made a big exploration play in Russia that was later walled off by sanctions, and bet on shale gas through the purchase of XTO when the real money was to be found in shale oil. After taking over as CEO in 2017, Woods pursued an aggressive expansion plan to rebuild Exxon, spending more than $200 billion on oil and gas projects over 7 years. The centerpiece of his plan? Shale oil from the Permian Basin. But investors hated the idea. They wanted cash returns via dividends and buybacks, not investments that could take years, if not decades, to bear fruit. Unmoved, Woods held that his strategy would set Exxon up well for the eventual upturn in prices, arguing earnings could double in just 7 years. When COVID-19 struck in 2020, Exxon found itself unusually exposed. Woods' spending spree forced him to borrow to fund Exxon's dividend with debt, delay projects, and shed staff. In 2020, the company posted its first annual loss in 40 years, and the stock was removed from the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Meanwhile, Exxon's arch rivals, Chevron Corporation and ConocoPhillips, capitalized on the downturn with their own acquisitions. In the second half of the year, Exxon and Pioneer discussed a possible deal, according to people familiar with the conversations. Sheffield was intrigued, but said the company was not for sale. Sheffield had recently come out of retirement, unhappy with his successor's performance and determined to preserve his legacy. Upon his return in 2019, he cut jobs, scrapped growth targets, and was one of the first shale CEOs to win over investors by pivoting from production growth to dividends. Behind the scenes, Sheffield sketched out strategic options, including buying up rivals to create a Permian mega producer or selling to a supermajor, plans the pandemic threatened to scrap. He worried that majors like Exxon would scoop up independent rivals on the cheap. The industry is facing a wave of bankruptcies, and the supermajors intend to pick up the pieces, he said in April 2020. Sheffield had no intention of waiting around for extinction. In 2020, around the same time as the initial Exxon approach, he convinced his board to buy back his play to consolidate the Midland Basin, the Permian's eastern side, spending nearly $13 billion buying up Parsley Energy, chaired by his son Brian, and the private equity-backed Double Point Energy. The deals would boost cash flow, snatch up prime drilling locations, and fetch Pioneer a higher price if it were to be acquired. His third target, Endeavor Resources, was a step too far. "It's not for sale, and I don't anticipate it coming up for sale at any time," he said later. Despite Sheffield waving off Wood's interest, the pair remained friendly. But any hopes of a deal became further remote when Engine Number One, an activist investor group with a tiny stake in Exxon, kicked off a campaign against the company for its environmental record and poor capital management in late 2020, drawing support from big shareholders, including BlackRock Inc. and State Street Corporation. In May 2021, the six-month campaign culminated in a shock win for Engine Number One that forced Exxon to replace three of its board members, a quarter of its total, with Engine's rebel directors. For Woods, it proved to be the dark before the dawn. The dawn. By early 2022, the oil and gas sector had roared back to life following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the reopening of economies, and the widespread availability of COVID vaccines. Nearly all U.S. oil producers reaped record profits, none more than Exxon, whose earnings topped $55 billion, the most in its 140-year history. By early 2023, the stock rallied to a record high. Woods' counter-cyclical investments during the downturn began to pay off, giving him the cash and stock he needed for the big acquisition that had eluded him during the pandemic. At the beginning of 2023, his team reconnected with Sheffield to discuss an all-stock deal, but Sheffield would only accept such a bid at a significant premium to the current share price, terms Exxon wasn't ready to accept. In April, Pioneer had held informal talks with Exxon on a deal that could close by the end of the year, the Wall Street Journal reported. Weeks later, Sheffield convened an employee meeting at Pioneer's Irving, Texas headquarters, where staffers believed he would announce plans to sell the company. Instead, he announced he would be stepping down for a second time by the end of the year. Rich Dealey, Pioneer's longtime COO, would replace him. But Dealey's CEO prospects would be short-lived. By late September, Exxon, now convinced of Pioneer's worthiness, made a formal offer, this time for a premium to its market value. On September 28, the companies signed confidentiality agreements that kicked off an official negotiation process. Unlike most big deals, negotiations in early October focused on personnel rather than price, according to people close to the conversations. Sheffield pushed hard for its own employees, including a key role for Dealey in Exxon's new Permian division. While final positions have yet to be announced, Woods stressed in an interview that job cuts would be minimal and that the integration process would involve cross-fertilization of best practices between the two groups. Advisors and industry watchers were surprised at how quickly a deal of this magnitude came together. Sheffield's push for a top position for Dealey may have received a boost on October 5th when David Scott, Exxon's top Permian executive, was arrested for alleged sexual assault by police at a budget hotel in Montgomery County, just outside of Houston. Exxon said Scott will not continue work responsibilities as the investigation proceeds. Just hours later, the Wall Street Journal reported that the deal was close. Several other media, including Bloomberg News, confirmed the development. Within a week came the final announcement. Pioneer would receive Exxon stock worth $59.5 billion at an 18% premium to its market value before the media reports. On the morning of October 11th, Woods and Sheffield appeared alongside each other for media interviews at a studio near Pioneer's Irving headquarters just outside Dallas. More money than God. To persuade U.S. competition regulators to bless the deal, Exxon says adding Pioneer would mean its production would be less than 15% the Permian Basin's overall output and would boost U.S. energy independence. It will also be a win for the environment because Exxon will emit fewer emissions while producing Pioneer's barrels and accelerate its net zero target by 15 years, Woods said in an interview with Bloomberg TV. But winning over Washington, D.C. could be a tall order. Last year, President Biden called out Exxon for making more money than God at a time when consumers were buckling under high gasoline prices. And under Chair Lina Khan, the Federal Trade Commission has scrutinized several deals in oil and gas, bucking precedent. Investors may also need some convincing. Since news of the deal broke, Exxon has underperformed the S&P Energy Index. While it's common for the buying company's stock to drop after a deal of this size, analysts have said there's little evidence yet that Exxon can drill better wells than Pioneer, a key reason why Woods believes he can drive $2 billion of annual cost savings over time. Investors would have preferred Exxon to make savings by cutting drilling activity instead, according to Jason Gabelman, a New York-based analyst at Cowan & Company. But Woods is confident in his plans, and more importantly, believes Exxon is now back on the leading edge of the oil industry. You see a natural fit and an opportunity for us to take advantage of some of the techniques we've been developing, some of those technologies, and applying it to what is the premier acreage in the Midland Pioneer has, he said. From the inside pages of Tuesday's newspaper, Midland College announces new Jim and Paula Henry Scholarship. The Midland College family was saddened to learn of the death of Jim Henry, who passed away October 17th. Henry's advice and philanthropy to Midland College expanded several decades. He served on the original steering committee of the Midland College Advanced Technology Center and was a Midland College Foundation board member from 2010 until September of this year. Jim and his wife Paula endowed the West Texas Symposium of History, West Texas Journal of History, and the Henry Chair of History. Their philanthropy to the college includes the Henry Innovation Center, engineering equipment, Friends of the Series, and numerous capital campaign projects. Most recently, the Henry Foundation invested $1 million in the Midland College Pre-K Academy and Center for Teaching Excellence. In 2019, upon the 50th anniversary of the Henry's business in West Texas, employees of Henry Resources and the Henry Foundation endowed the Henry Chair of Engineering at Midland College. To honor his memory, the Henry Foundation on Friday established the Paula and Jim Henry Endowed Alumni Scholarship at Midland College to be awarded to MC graduates who transfer to pursue further undergraduate and graduate degrees, with preference given to history and engineering majors. The scholarship pays tribute to Paula's educational background in history and Jim's accomplishments in engineering. Early voting information locations in Midland County, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Early voting locations. Elections Office, Midland County Annex Building, 2100 North A Street. Centennial Library, 2503 West Loop 250 North. Cogdell Learning Center, 201 West Florida Avenue. Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 3813 North Midland Drive. Village at Manor Park, Margaret Cowden Clubhouse, Sparks Great Room, 5212 Sinclair Avenue. early voting hours for all locations, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 28th, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 29th, 1 to 7 p.m. October 30th through November 3rd, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. School district employees. With Midland ISD and Greenwood ISD on the ballot, Section 61.010 of the Texas Election Code will affect voters employed by the school systems. We are asking that school district employees be mindful of their attire when they come in to vote. Shirts should be turned inside out or a sweater worn over to cover up any logos. Name badges should be left in vehicle or placed in purse or bag. Please help remind voters as early voting approaches. Source, Midland County. Important election dates. October 23rd, first day of 2 weeks of early voting. October 27th, last day to apply for a ballot by mail. November 3rd, last day of early voting. November 7th, election day, and last day to receive ballot by mail. National Weather Service says most rain falls in Midland in one day in nearly a year. The National Weather Service showed that around 3/4 of an inch of rain fell at Midland International through Monday afternoon. The National Weather Service showed 0.73 of an inch, which the NWS expects is the start of wetter weather pattern. The NWS is calling for a 30% chance of rain Tuesday, a 60% chance Tuesday night, a 70% chance Wednesday, and a 40% chance Wednesday night. The rainfall through Monday afternoon was the most recorded in one day at Midland International, going back to November 25th, 2022, 0.77 inch. UTBB says Texas Rangers investigating police shooting at Wagner Noel, from staff reports. The Texas Rangers are investigating an incident near the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center that involved a man using a front-end loader tractor to damage law enforcement vehicles and shots fired by five UTPB officers. UTPB reported the Texas Rangers are handling the criminal investigation. UTPB reported Saturday that its police department reported an individual tried to enter the event center but did not have a ticket, so he was asked to leave. About an hour later, police saw him near the engineering building, a news release stated. When officers approached him, he ran away. UTPB then reported that just after 10 p.m., officers noticed a large front-end loader tractor coming through the parking lot. The suspect then drove the tractor onto State Highway 191. That's when he hit both UTPB and Odessa police vehicles, UTPB stated. He ignored commands to stop and purposely drove the tractor toward officers, placing them in danger. Five UTPB officers shot their firearms toward the individual, who sustained multiple wounds. Officers administered first aid, and the man was taken to the hospital in critical condition. No guests or officers were injured, according to UTPB. Per UT system police policy, the five UTPB officers involved in the shooting will be placed on paid administrative leave pending the results of an investigation, UTPB reported. Small Bites, Dave's Hot Chicken Coming to Midland, Odessa, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Two Lubbock natives will bring Nashville-style Dave's Hot Chicken to Midland, Odessa, and the Panhandle. Mickey Rogers and Daniel Stanton own Cafe Venture Catering, a franchisee business with Fuddruckers and Luby's corporate system. They built the Fuddruckers and Music City Mall in Odessa and 11 other locations throughout Texas, Oklahoma, and New Mexico. Now the Texas Tech grads have signed a deal to bring Dave's Hot Chicken to Midland, Odessa, Lubbock, and Amarillo. According to Rogers, the duo has been searching for a portfolio diversifier and fan-favorite product for years. The immediate hype and growth of Dave's felt like the perfect fit. Started in L.A. by Armand Oganesson, classically trained chef Dave Kapsolchian, and brothers Tommy and Gary Rubian, the fried chicken joint began in early 2017 as a parking lot pop-up, but quickly grew after daily lines began forming around the block. There are now more than 140 North American locations. The restaurant specializes in chicken strips and sandwiches, offering seven spice levels ranging from no spice to Reaper. Only four options make up the menu. Dave's number one, with two tenders, fries, Dave's sauce, a slice of bread, and pickles. Dave's number two with two sliders, fries, kale slaw, Dave's sauce and pickles. Dave's number three with one tender, one slider, fries and a slice of bread, kale slaw and pickles, and Dave's sauce. And Dave's number four with one slider, fries, kale slaw, pickles, and Dave's sauce. Other side options include cheese fries, mac and cheese, and additional sliders and tenders sold in singles. As of now, no location or starting operation dates have been announced. Learn more about Cafe Venture Catering at cafeventurecatering.com and Dave's Hot Chicken at daveshotchicken.com. Midland Reporter Telegram Opinion Pieces, Tuesday, October 24th. Opinion: Midland YMCA expansion is vital for our community, by the Midland YMCA. Growing up, many of us had fond memories of our local YMCA, a place where we not only built lifelong friendships, but also learned the values of community, health, and wellness. The Midland YMCA has been a pillar of support for generations, offering a wide range of programs and services that benefit our neighborhoods. It is, therefore, disheartening to see small groups forming just this week to oppose the expansion of the Midland YMCA North. This expansion is not just about adding a beautiful, state-of-the-art new facility. It's about the Y continuing to play a crucial role in the positive growth of our community. As Midland experiences growth, particularly in the northern part of our city, we must adapt and expand to meet the needs of our residents. The Midland YMCA has done exactly that for more than 70 years, and it's only fitting that they continue to do so by renovating an existing structure on the corner of Avalon and Mockingbird. This project will promptly serve the needs of Midland families seeking affordable after-school programming for children aged 5 to 12, as well as health and wellness programs for individuals of all ages. One of the most significant advantages of this expansion is that it will free up to 100 spots at the Midland YMCA downtown. This means that more individuals in our community can access the YMCA's services, helping them to lead healthier lives. Moreover, it creates up to 225 possible enrollments from nearby elementary schools at the north location, giving children a safe, nurturing environment in which to grow and learn. We have heard the concerns about increased traffic and the strain on infrastructure. It's important to note that 1,000 visitors per week is the peak volume at the downtown location between the hours of 5 a.m. and 9 p.m. At 69,000 square feet less in size, this initial limited service Y is expected to have much less visitors than that with scheduled activities over the course of the day. And since we primarily serve families and school kids, the number of visits doesn't equal the number of vehicles. That's all to say that before moving forward with this expansion, we did a lot of research, planning, and discussions to build support from leaders and neighbors throughout our amazing city, and we're thrilled that the city deemed the infrastructure as sufficient for the first phase. We won't stop there. The Midland YMCA takes these traffic concerns seriously and is advocating for upgrading the infrastructure to ensure the area can accommodate the new facility, especially for families. Safety is the number one priority, and this expansion is planned to meet and exceed the required safety standards. Our youth in Midland's future are Midland's future, and this expansion will provide more kids with a safe, affordable, and fun place to go while parents work out, and connect. The numbers don't lie. 1,108 children are already benefiting from the YMCA's programs, including enrichment activities, playtime, and social connection. Over 470 kids are currently on a wait list, underscoring the urgent need for this expansion. But this is just the beginning. The Midland YMCA is ready to build a comprehensive plan for the remaining acreage that will best serve the community. This includes offering a variety of programs for all age groups, from children to seniors and everyone in between. This includes pickleball, fitness classes, social activities, and family events, connecting people to make this an even better place to live, work, and play. The Midland YMCA North aligns with our city's goals and values, and its expansion will contribute significantly to the City of Midland's collective future. As we approach the upcoming vote on Tuesday, we hope that the small but vocal opposition we have faced and our fellow council members will give careful consideration to this matter and the facts presented by the Midland YMCA. This expansion is an investment in the well-being of our community and our future. Let's support it and allow the Midland YMCA to continue its vital role in our city's growth and development. For more news and updates about the North expansion and hashtag YIT Matters to our greater community, follow the Midland YMCA on Facebook at facebook.com/MidlandYMCA. Midland Reporter Telegram Life Tributes, Tuesday, October 24th. Charles H. Thomas. Charles H. Thomas, 88, of Midland, passed away October 21st after a long battle with Alzheimer's disease. Chuck was born on January 10th, 1935, to Owen and Louise Thomas in Tampa, Florida. He had one older brother, Bill Thomas. Charles was predeceased by his parents, Owen and Louise Thomas, and brother Bill Thomas. Survived by his wife, Chris Thomas, daughter Shannon Thomas Lanisa, and Claudio Lanisa, their children Bella Lanisa, 26, Dante Lanisa, 27, son Charlie Thomas and Elizabeth, their children Jake and Dean Thomas, 13, and their youngest son, Zach Thomas. The family will hold a private service. Reception and condolences will be held at the home of Chris Thomas Tuesday, October 24th from 4 to 6 p.m. for beloved friends. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to Midland Children's Rehabilitation Center or any Alzheimer's charity organization. Cremation arrangements were under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Magali Ramirez Fuentes. Magali was born in Perryton, Texas, to Margarito and Mary Ramirez. Magali is survived by her devoted and loving wife, Drea, and her parents, Margarito and Mary Ramirez, her brother, Lionel Valdez, her grandmother, Mercedes Borrego, and many aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, cousins, godchildren, extended family, and many, many friends. Magali is preceded in death by her paternal grandfather, Angel Ramirez Franco, her paternal grandmother, Reyes Gonzalez de Ramirez, her maternal grandfather, Esquiel Borrego Jr., and her father-in-law, Samuel Arambula Fuentes. Viewing will be Tuesday, October 24th and Wednesday, October 25th, both days, from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, 2508 North Big Spring Street. Rosary to be recited Wednesday, October 25th at 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Funeral Mass is set for Thursday, October 26th at 2 p.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church, 4601 Neely Avenue. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. This is the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Wednesday, October 25th, 2023. Front page. City Council approves plat for new YMCA, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The Midland City Council approved a preliminary plat for a YMCA addition in Northwest Midland. By a 5-2 vote, city leaders approved the preliminary plat of the 25.195-acre tract. Earlier this month, the City of Midland's Planning and Zoning Commission denied the preliminary plat by a vote of 5-0. Dan Corrales and Amy Stretcher Burks were the council members voting against the plat for the YMCA. During the nearly 2 hours spent on the issue during Tuesday's council meeting, around 40 people offered remarks for city leaders. Around 25 of those spoke on behalf of approving the plat. About half of those individuals were staff members or members of the YMCA board. Proponents talked about the child care opportunities that would be opened up with the development of the area southeast of the intersection of Golden Gate Drive and Mockingbird Lane, and well north of Briarwood Avenue, County Road 60. Those people mentioned the opportunities offered at the downtown YMCA, the waiting list that existed for children across Midland, and the fact that some children from North and Northwest Midland had to travel around an hour to and from school when a facility in Northwest Midland would provide a safer alternative. YMCA officials, in an opinion article in the Reporter-Telegram, previously stated that the Midland YMCA North will serve the needs of Midland families seeking affordable after-school programming for children aged 5 to 12 and health and wellness programs for individuals of all ages. It will free up 100 spots at the Midland YMCA downtown, YMCA officials previously stated. Moreover, it creates up to 225 possible enrollments from nearby elementary schools at the North location, giving children a safe, nurturing environment in which to grow and learn. Infrastructure, specifically roads, dominated the conversation from residents already living in that area. They wondered about the potential traffic issues at the intersections of Briarwood and both Golden Gate and Avalon. They talked about city staffing comments that infrastructure improvements, including the expansion of Briarwood, a light at Briarwood and Avalon, and upgrades to Golden Gate and Avalon, were planned but had not yet been funded. Just down the road from the YMCA location is Bynum School. Corrales said that the city has put money toward planning so development could be done right away. "I'm not against the Y," Corrales said. "We have to grow responsibly." Stretcher Burks, the council representative for that area, District 4. She asked for a meeting with the YMCA to talk about another site option in Northwest Midland. She said she had talked with the local foundation to find a win-win solution. She also stated the city can't constantly chase development. The discussion happened inside a jam-packed council chamber. The size of the crowd inside the chamber and overflowing into an adjacent hall was another example of both sides of an issue trying to demonstrate their respective support through attendance at a council meeting. Ultimately, the supporters of the YMCA's expansion used the program's worth to help sell a majority of the council. Those facts included 436 kids in its after-school program and 171 of those on government assistance, the 52 on a YMCA scholarship, the waiting list of around 50, and the hundreds of children in the child care program for children, infants through students up to age 4. City Council votes to remove Cisniega. Council elevated Elvie Brown to take her place on the MDC board. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The Midland City Council booted Lucy Cisniega off the Midland Development Corporation board and elevated Elvie Brown to take her place. Politics was served as the final course at the end of a marathon meeting on Tuesday, and before city leaders adjourned, Cisniega was removed from the MDC board, and council voted to have Cisniega remain on the Planning and Zoning Commission, where she previously served as a chair. It was a process, and that started with the council unanimously passing a resolution that established a policy limiting eligibility for service on City of Midland boards and commissions with final decision-making authority. The issue had come up previously when city leaders agreeing that people didn't need to be serving on the Midland Development Corporation and Planning and Zoning. The policy does not apply to city boards and commissions that are purely advisory in nature, the city reported. Not long after passing that resolution, during hour 5 of the meeting, the Midland City Council went through appointments for City of Midland boards and commissions. When it was time to fill PNZ seats, Cisniega, founder of Cisniega Real Estate, was nominated and seconded. When it was brought up, she has a seat on the MDC board. It became apparent quickly that at least 4 council members were giving Cisniega a chance to participate on PNZ and would look for an alternative for MDC. Even at one point, John Norman told Cisniega, "I would like to advise you to say yes." During the process, Corrales defended Cisniega, his friend and Republican National Hispanic Assembly colleague, stating she was the lone Hispanic on the board and telling others that there are other council members seeking to rid the MDC board of people who disagree with them. Council members reminded Cisniega that it is up to the council to determine who they appoint and that, in this case, Cisniega would not pick her assignment, even though she later stated the MDC was her preference. When a person in the council chamber, Heather Bredemus, approached the council to ask what happened, Jack Ladd reminded Bredemus that Cisniega deserved her right to have her privacy as to why she was being removed. After Cisniega was removed and Elvie Brown was approved as the 7th member of the board, Norman asked if the votes could be undone. Norman learned it would require too many procedures and the outcome likely wouldn't change. It also left Cisniega to make a decision whether she will join the new Planning and Zoning Commission. Tuesday's proceeding also marked the first time that an MDC board appointee was removed in such public fashion, but it was also a reminder during this very political year for this Midland City Council that if one has the votes, they can start or stop multi-million dollar projects or decide who serves and on what boards. In this case, it took four: Mayor Lori Blong, Scott Dufford, Robin Poole, and Ladd. Midland Polo Club closes season with big tournament, by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. With the 2023 fall season coming to an end, the Midland Polo Club will hold a U.S. Polo Association tournament Sunday to close out another successful year. Started by Jay Floyd in the early 1900s, the Polo Club's history and pride runs deep in Midland. By the 1930s, the Tall City served as the principal source for polo ponies in the country, according to the crew's website. Polo is just something different for everyone to come out and enjoy, and that not that many people know about, club manager Violetta Escapite stated. Sunday's J. Floyd USPA Sportsmanship Cup will showcase the club's camaraderie and skill through a set of three matches starting at noon and occurring again at 2 p.m. and 3:30 p.m. Playing will be Hall of Famer Hector Galindo, a Midland native and former polo teammate of King Charles at Geoffrey Kent in England. USPA tournaments are the most competitive. They're fun to watch because you see all the players at their full potential compared to non-USPA tournaments, Escapante explained. Free and open to the public, the Sportsmanship Cup offers community members insight into one of the oldest team sports in the history. The 7th annual Candy Drop will also take place at 5:30 p.m., courtesy of Greg Briano and his 1966 Bell UH-01H Huey helicopter. First, second, and third place prizes will be given to kids with the best costumes. As for rules and regulations of the Polo Club, Escapite said there's no dress code and encourages guests staying the whole day to dress comfortably. Dogs are always welcome, but need to be kept on a leash at all times. The 2024 season starts in the spring with a tentative April 14th date. To learn more about MPC, visit MidlandPoloClub.net. From the Inside Pages, Midland ISD reports 30% decline in number of fights. District implements several changes to curb behavioral issues on campuses, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Midland ISD has ramped up its efforts to curb behavioral issues on campuses, and the district stated that efforts are paying off. In a news release, the district reported that through the first 6 weeks of the 2023-24 school year, data shows student fights have decreased 30% compared to this time last year. We are immensely proud of the progress we have made in improving student discipline and decreasing disruptive behavior incidents in our schools, said Roberto Cedillo, deputy superintendent, in the news release. The district reported the improvement is attributed to factors such as effective implementation of the student code of conduct, setting clear expectations for students, and providing robust support for teachers when they're faced with behavioral issues. Through the open lines of communication and regular engagement, administrators have established a strong partnership with parents, empowering them to actively participate in their child's education and reinforcing the importance of mutual respect and responsible behavior, the district reported. Feedback from student and parent advisory meetings indicate far fewer problems in the hallways and that the district's communication about expectations at the beginning of the school year was a big help. Also, students understand that there are consequences for disruptive behaviors, namely being placed into a disciplinary alternative education program at a different campus. The district stated that if a student has an issue or concern with another student, he or she should tell an adult, tell a teacher, counselor, or administrator, and they will help de-escalate the situation. Getting into a fight is absolutely unnecessary, and it disrupts the entire campus, which affects everyone and isn't fair to anyone. Parents are encouraged to talk with their child about the importance of following rules, expectations, and working to create a safe learning environment for all students, the district reported. Nearly 2.5 inches of rain falls at Midland International, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. A record rainfall has brought needed moisture to land inside Midland County. The National Weather Service reported that 2.46 inches of rain fell at Midland International Airport on Monday. That broke the previous record for October 23rd, 1.94 inches set in 1978. The NWS also reported the 2.46 inches helped make a dent in the yearly drought conditions, something that the statistics show was needed. Prior to Monday, 3.04 inches had fallen this year at Midland International. The amount of rain that fell Monday was more than 80% of the previous yearly total. The 2.46 inches also was the most rain recorded in one day in Midland since June 27, 2021, when 2.67 inches fell in Midland. The rainfall Monday increased the yearly total to 5.5 inches, which is still 6.48 inches less than normal through October 23rd, 11.98 inches. On Sunday, the NWS had reported the amount which had fallen in Midland was nearly 9 inches less than what was normal through October 23rd. The National Service reported Tuesday that a second round of rain is expected Tuesday night into Wednesday as a line of storms is expected to push through. Widespread accumulations of at least a half inch of rain is expected, with higher chances of very heavy rainfall found across the east central Permian Basin. The NWS also reported showers and thunderstorms are likely, mainly before 10 a.m. Some of the storms could produce heavy rain. The chance of rain falls from 60% early to 10% later and into Wednesday night. Man arrested for threatening to shoot people outside Midland Whataburger. MPD says cocaine and stolen gun found following incident. By Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. A 31-year-old man was arrested Friday after threatening to shoot four people outside a Whataburger in South Midland, according to court documents. Midland Police Department officers were dispatched at about 12:47 a.m. to the Whataburger on Rankin Highway in reference to a disturbance with weapons. Upon arrival, the officers observed a black Jeep with a male in the driver's seat, a woman standing near the driver's side, and three others behind the Jeep. The male in the Jeep, identified as Ryan J. Dominguez, was taken into custody while the officers conducted a sweep of the inside of the vehicle. During the sweep, an NPD officer found a bag inside the center console containing three separate bags that had a substance that tested positive for cocaine, according to the arrest affidavit. The total weight of the bag was 2.54 grams. The officers also found a black Sig Sauer 380 pistol tucked in between the driver's seat and the center console right where the male was sitting, according to the arrest affidavit. The pistol was later found to be reported stolen by the Odessa Police Department. One of the female victims told officers that they were walking into Whataburger when she observed a male driving a Jeep with the window rolled down, looking at her in a manner that made her feel uncomfortable. She stated she told him to stop looking at her and flipped him off. Dominguez then stopped in the middle of the parking lot and got into a verbal argument with the group. The victim stated that's when Dominguez started to threaten to shoot them or pop them. Dominguez got out of the Jeep and had his hand behind his back as if he were holding a gun, according to the arrest affidavit. A witness stated that prior to making the call to 911, he observed Dominguez waving the black pistol he was holding in his left hand at the kids outside in the air, according to the arrest affidavit. Dominguez was charged with four counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony, theft of a firearm, a state felony, and possession of a controlled substance, one more than 1 gram, but less than 4 grams, a third-degree felony. City of Odessa says arson suspects started fire after being fired. By Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. An Odessa arson suspect had been fired by his employer before he started a large trash and tire fire in southwest Odessa, according to a City of Odessa Facebook post. The city, citing an arrest affidavit, stated that William Arnett, 58, was fired for being intoxicated at work. Arnett also got into a disagreement with another employee, saying it was not right to fight on a white man, and lit that employee's punching bag on fire before leaving. Arnett returned to Circle C Trucking, located in the 2500 block of West Murphy Street, and set fire to trash near a pile of tires. According to the affidavit, the employee tried to put the fire out, but it got too big, so he called the police and fire departments. Odessa Fire Rescue responded at about 12:36 a.m. to the fire at Circle C Trucking. At about 1:50 a.m., the Odessa Police Department located Arnett during a traffic stop and was arrested, according to a previous Reporter Telegram report. Arnett was arrested for arson of a building, a second-degree felony, and DWI, a Class B misdemeanor. He's being held in Ector County Jail on a total bond of $26,000. ECISD schools placed in secure status after FBI received threat. By Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. Ector County ISD officials reported that all elementary schools across the district were placed into secure Tuesday morning after the FBI received a threat against elementary students. Overnight, the FBI received a voicemail from a man in Odessa who threatened to shoot elementary students unless he got help, ECISD said in a press release. When notified this morning, local law enforcement agencies began a coordinated effort to locate the man. The elementary schools were placed into secure status, which means all students and faculty members remain inside and visitors are restricted from the building. At about 10:30 a.m., the district lifted the secure status after a person of interest was located by the FBI, Department of Public Safety, and ECISD officers. After interviewing that person, the investigation continues and officers do not believe the threat sent to the FBI to be credible, ECISD said. The district stated that they were not able to release the reason why the secure status was activated because they did not want it to be widely reported and potentially tip off a suspect. We want to thank parents and staff members for their trust and their patience throughout this situation. Our officers and staff are working, first and foremost, to keep our kids safe. News of Tuesday morning's threat was followed by a notice by ECISD around 3:30 p.m., that Sam Houston Elementary was placed on lockdown due to an unknown person entering the office. The lockdown was lifted at about 3:55 p.m. Two Midlanders among seven arrested in human trafficking and prostitution operation. DPS recovers 14 human trafficking victims. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Seven suspects were arrested and booked into the Midland and Ector County jails as a result of an online solicitation of prostitution operation, according to the Department of Public Safety. All seven now face state jail felony charges. From October 16th through the 19th, DPS Criminal Investigations Division, CID, conducted the operation in conjunction with the recovery operation to locate and identify victims of human trafficking. The operations targeted individuals seeking to exploit and victimize trafficking victims in order to identify and apprehend individuals suspected of being involved in human trafficking using various websites to solicit sex acts. DPS's Intelligence and Counterterrorism, ICT, Division, Texas Highway Patrol, THP, Homeland Security Investigations, HSI, Midland Police Department, MPD, Odessa Police Department, OPD, and the Midland County Sheriff's Office, MCSO, all assisted in these investigations. In addition, multiple civilian entities, NGOs, also assisted to aid in the recovery efforts. The following were arrested and booked into the Midland and Ector County jails. Christopher Tisler, 43, of Chico, California, solicitation of prostitution, SJF. Jesus Madrid, 54, of Odessa, solicitation of prostitution. Isaac Vasquez Gonzalez, 24, of Midland, solicitation of prostitution. Michael Turpin, 30, of Millsap, solicitation of prostitution. Jason Lopez, 38, of Midland, solicitation of prostitution. Jose Manzo Lama, 53, of Odessa, solicitation of prostitution. Guy Hudson, 43, of Odessa, warrant failure to appear, solicitation of prostitution. This successful operation recovered 14 human trafficking victims across the United States, DPS reported. Their places of residency is as follows: Dallas, Irving, Las Vegas, Nevada, Houston, Austin, Odessa, and Midland. These investigations highlight the partnership between federal, local, and state law enforcement partners working together to combat human trafficking. If you are a victim of human trafficking or have information about this type of criminal activity, please contact the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 888-373-7888. Midland Reporter Telegram Life Tributes, Wednesday, October 25th. Greg Keyes, Midland. James Gregory Greg Keyes, 89, left this life on October 23rd to be reunited with his beloved wife, Dorothy, in the presence of their Lord Jesus Christ. Greg was born on November 8, 1933, to Ruth Ann and Hollis Keyes in Pampa, Texas. He was predeceased by both parents and his beloved wife, Dorothy, in 2014. He survived by his two sons, Randy Keyes and wife Patty of Houston, and granddaughter Allison Keyes of Boston, and David Keyes and grandson Caleb Keyes of Midland. He's also survived by nieces Donna Bliss of Knoxville, Tennessee, Margaret Anderson of Austin, Texas, and Jerry McWilliams of San Antonio, along with their husbands and children. The family will receive friends for visitation Friday, October 27th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home. Graveside services will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, October 28th at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave your online condolences. Rebecca Tucker, Odessa. Rebecca Ann Tucker of Odessa passed away after her lengthy battle with cancer on September 28, 2023. She was born to Maybelline Reedy in Mineral Wells, Texas, on October 28, 1949. She grew up with three older sisters, a younger brother, and a younger sister. The family moved to Odessa in 1958. Rebecca was preceded in death by her husband, Cecil Tucker, her cherished stepson, Raymond Tucker, her great-granddaughter, Lily Maxey, her mother, Maybelline Lee, her older sisters, Marquetta Lelou, Carol Gordon, Faye Brady, and her younger brothers, Larry Sawyer and Robert Lee. Rebecca is survived by her daughter, Michelle Wildman, and husband, Joey of Odessa. Children not born of her but loved by her, Carla Horkey of Little Elm, Ronald Tucker and wife, Juanice of San Angelo, Regina Tucker of Odessa, Kelly Tucker of Midland. 9 grandchildren, 19 great-grandchildren, 1 great-great-grandchild, her youngest sister, Connie Rogers, and husband, Jeff, many nieces and nephews, 5 puppy dogs and a cat, as well as many, many friends. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 28th at Highland Methodist Church, 1808 North Dixie in Odessa. Flowers are welcome. Contributions may be sent to Odessa Humane Society or Hospice. The family would like to extend our heartfelt appreciation and warmest gratitude to Interim Hospice and to all the staff on 5 Central at Medical Center Hospital. Thank you for being the light in our darkest hours. Vitra D. Boozer. Vitra D. Boozer, 54, passed away Tuesday, October 17th. Viewing will be Thursday, October 26th from 1 to 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is Friday, October 27th at 11 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Francis Hedrick. Francis Hedrick, age 85, of San Angelo, went to be with the Lord October 20th. Cremation services have been arranged with the memorial service at a later date. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Online condolences can be received at stantonfh.com. Aitano Ramos. Baby Aitano Ramos of Odessa transitioned back into the arms of Jesus on Saturday, October 21st, 2023. Dear Abby, for Wednesday, October 25th. Result of doctor visit is a case of confusion. Dear Abby, I am a man in my 50s. A few months ago, I had a routine doctor's appointment with a new primary care physician. I intended the appointment to be a complete regular physical. I don't, thankfully, have any major physical health issues that I know of, but I was always taught it is wise to have periodic physical exams in case there is a less obvious medical issue, as well as to get to know one's doctor. I went for the physical exam. I was not asked to undress as I have been with all my previous doctors. The doctor seemed nice, but I found it strange that I wasn't examined physically. I find it hard to understand how a doctor could properly examine me without undressing. The doctor should be used to seeing bodies, and I cannot understand why the doctor or staff were reluctant to see me undress. I found this all very confusing. Perhaps there was some miscommunication. I don't know if this is unusual, temporary, or a new normal that I haven't heard about. Next time, should I be more clear about wanting to be examined thoroughly, or should I change doctors? Covered up in Virginia. Dear Covered Up, contact the doctor. Explain that in the past you have always had a complete physical which involved you disrobing, and ask why it didn't happen during your last visit. If the answer you receive is unsatisfactory, change doctors. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been married 9 years. We're active in our church. I'm very involved with our women's ministry, but my husband has an issue with our leader, Nedra. Nedra has bad-mouthed my husband to my face. I went to my pastor with the issue, and I am basically waiting on God to fix it. Our WM team meets multiple times a week, which means I leave my husband alone for dinner on those nights. I always make sure he has dinner when I'm not at home. Our meetings can go for an hour and a half to 2 hours, and my husband is always upset when I get home from them. I don't know what to do. He's not upset that I'm going to the meetings. He's upset about how long they last. Nedra doesn't like him, and he doesn't like her, especially since he knows what she said about him. I feel stuck in the middle. What do I do? Lady of Faith in Texas. Dear Lady, if these meetings occur more than twice a week, your husband may have a point. Whether he and Nedra like each other is beside the point, unless what he resents is that you're with that witch. He may feel it encroaches on time you should be spending together. It's time you and your husband have a calm discussion about the frequency and length of those meetings so an acceptable compromise can be reached. Start now.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.